Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And Mully and Haw talk Cubs baseball and Chicago sports every weekday morning from 5:30 to 10 on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app. Chicago's dynamic duel, Mully and Haw.
And you grace their airwaves on Friday mornings.
Yes, Friday morning at 8. We will be on with them. Always look forward to that. It's always a lot of fun to spend some time with Mully and Haw. Great guys. It's fun to have good baseball and good sports conversations in our city with people that are really locked in to what's going on in our town. Enjoy listening to them. They're kind of my information highway to Chicago sports all off season. Mm-hmm. I get to tune into them every morning. And what great guys. Great show.
Wow. Look at that. How's that for a compliment?
How about that?
That's our guy, Rod Coomer. You hear him doing Coom the dog. Cubs games. The Coom Dog. He's one of God's great men, and he joins us now on the Score Hotline. Wow. Thank you, buddy. The check's in the mail.
Yeah. Just a cup of coffee is all I ask for. You know, it's just coffee on the road or something. How are you guys doing this morning?
Doing well, Coom. Everything welcome good? Back home. Long road trip. Seemed like you guys were gone a month.
It does, David. I left for spring training. I think it was the 18th of February, and we got home just enough time to do laundry and go back on the road. So, I'm kind of getting reacquainted with my house again for here in Chicago, so it's kind of nice.
You know, I got to tell you, we look at that road trip. So you got 9 games in 10 days, and the Cubs come home 5-4, and you sit there and you're like, wow, that's a hell of a road trip against good teams to come back with a winning record. And the reality is they could have gone 7-2. I mean, it was, the games that they lost were games that they had won, and there were kind of bullpen issues. But the fact of the matter is, that's, given all the injuries, given all the issues, pretty extraordinary, that road trip.
It's very good. Mike, and whenever you go out west, and I don't have the answer. I'm not smart enough to have all the answers to some of these questions. I promise you that. But it's just difficult for teams to win out west. It just is. There's time change. There's travel. You go from city to city. It's just a very difficult place to play for teams in the Midwest or the East. And that's just all the way it's always been. So when you win 2 out of 3 series, when you go out west, in particular this year, this trip, because of the teams you play, and they, you know, were playoff teams and contenders, that was very good. The one thing you got to remember, though, the Cubs have lost a couple of those games that they could have won, without question. The game in San Diego, that was a bummer. Everybody knows it. There was another game in Seattle you could have won, that's for sure. But the thing is, they also won a couple games like that, too. So that's one of those things that you can look at it and go, I can remember walking to the team bus after a ball game going, wow, we just steal that one. That is sweet, you know. And so those things go both ways. You got to cut those bad ones loose, and you got to understand sometimes you get some of those too when you're a pretty good team.
Ron, I want to understand what Craig Counsell is looking for in his starting rotation. Jameson Taillon goes today. This is a boost. Ideally, if he can pitch like he did in the second half or parts of last year's second half of the season. But I don't know how long they want to go with him. He's probably going to be in a pitch count. It is his first start. But I don't know how long Craig Counsell wants to go with anybody. Ideally, this is, you know, a starting rotation that will take you into games and save your bullpen on occasion. But they're out-getters. And I don't know that we're not looking at this in the traditional sense any longer. So what is his goal when you're talking about either Taillon today or the rotation overall?
Well, the goal is very simple. The goal is to get outs, like you're saying, but pitch deep in the game. That's the goal. that just hasn't been the case here in the early going. You know, they've had a few outings that have gone through six innings, but that's it. So, you know, that really gets to be difficult on a ball club and on a bullpen. So what you're hoping for, now, I agree with your point about Tyone. I would say 90 pitches would be his max. They were hoping he would get to that before he got to Chicago. Some issues in the last two games he threw, from what I understand, his team not playing good defense and causing some issues in the innings. So then that was it, and he came out of the game. 85, 90 pitches, and then you got to see, you know, how does he look? Does he look strong? Does he look like, you know, he needs to come out at, you know, 75 pitches? So we'll see. You really do need J-Mo, though, to be that guy that he was in the second half. That's for sure.
Well, and the fact is he's on a four-year, $68 million contract. Yeah. So this is year two of that, and you he's here. So you better learn to love him, and you better figure out how to get the most out of him. It's surprising to me to a certain extent, but I guess it isn't, just because of the way life works. But you look at Kyle Hendricks' issues, and he struggled to start the season. And there are a lot of people that are trying to figure out why the Cubs decided to put Wesneski back into the minors. Like, you don't have that winning road trip if he doesn't have that last performance for you. He doesn't fly out there in the middle of the night and do such a good job. But you don't make decisions until you have to. And I don't think it's time to make a decision on Kyle Hendricks yet. I think that you want to see if he can turn this around. Maybe he can do it as quick as this weekend, because it obviously is a different team than the ones he's been against.
First of all, I'll address the Wesneski thing.
Yep.
He's one of those guys. I feel bad for him. He's in one of those situations, Mike. When we left spring training, they needed certain spots later in the bullpen, so that's why they went a certain way. They needed a left-hander in the pen. Little was the guy as opposed to Wesneski. Then he comes here, and he just, you know, pitches lights out and helps you win a ball game and saves the pen and, you know, does all those things. I mean, you couldn't ask for more out of a pitcher than what Wesneski just gave you. But with that being said, now you've got a doubleheader on Saturday. Your bullpen is beat up, and you need guys, not really beat up, but you need fresh arms. Let's just put it that way. And he just threw four innings. It's a terrible scenario for him. All the bad plays out, and now he has to go back to the minor leagues because he's not unavailable now for 3 days. You got to get fresh arms. I just feel terrible for him. When he finishes fourth inning, you know, as somebody who's been around their league a long time, I'm just looking going, this poor kid's going back to the minor leagues. If something happens, you know, he's going to be optioned back down, and it's terrible. So I feel terrible for him. He's a great young guy, and he's trying his butt off and working at it, and he's had some success and really saved the team the other day and helps you get a big win. And he goes to the minor leagues. The Kyle Hendricks thing, I would agree. I would give him another start and see how it goes. For me, and I love Kyle. We've all loved Kyle. He's, you know, he's the last of the Mohicans with the World Series team. And when I watch him pitch, as from the hitter's perspective, I don't know anything about pitching. I see a guy that's not doesn't have the command right now. That's what I see. I don't see a total difference in stuff. I think there are times he leaves his changeup. He leaves pitches up in the zone. I don't see some of the action on his changeup on occasion that we used to see on all the changeups. And some of the pitches are staying in the middle of the plate. And I don't care who you are, if you pitch in the middle of the plate about mid-thigh, you're going to get hit. And he's been getting hit and been getting hit hard. So hopefully he can figure that out, because nobody in the Cubs organization wants to see him leave, or, you know, have to go back to Mesa and get rebuild, or, you know, do whatever it needs to be. I just you want him to figure it out. He's such a good guy.
Convos with Coomer, sponsored by EOC Audio, Chicagoland's leader in audio, video networks, and home automation. EOCAudio.com. Okay, Coom, so Seiya Suzuki out for about a month with an oblique injury, different one from last year, but still serious nonetheless. They're in a position now. They bring up Alex Canario. I wonder if he starts today. They bring up Patrick Wisdom. I wonder what that means to Garrett Cooper. Could Christopher Morel see time in right field potentially? I don't like the idea of moving him off third base. How will it all fit together?
That's going to be the puzzle. That's why Gounce makes what he makes. he's got to figure this out. There's no doubt that the Wisdom move was made because we're going to face three lefties, I believe, in a row. So that's one of the things. That's why Mastroboni goes back to the minor leagues. You look at they've tried different guys in the outfield. I know Patrick played in Iowa the other day, played the outfield. I think he played left field. So I got to believe there's going to be a little bit of a tryout in the outfield. It would not surprise me at all if you saw Wisdom in right field in the next couple of days. He's a guy, he's a great athlete and can really run. They have the discussion is, do you, not if you're going to, but do you put Morel out there in the outfield? I'm kind of in your camp, David. I think Morel has done a very nice job at third base and you can see his progression is getting better, right? The defense is getting better. He's getting smoother on the routine. The routine is becoming more routine, I guess you might say, if that's a way of describing it. And I like his work. He's done very well, and I'm happy for him. So I'm with you. I would leave him at third base, and let's try to figure out the outfield with some of the other pieces.
If you need a closer today, where do you go?
Well, Mully, you got a couple outs in you?
No.
No, me neither. Yeah. I just say you go with Alzolay. Alzolay's your closer. Okay. You can't abandon him yet or even close to that. Those, you know, you got him and Neris who are probably going to go back and forth with that role a little bit, but I think with Alzolay, he's given up a couple big home runs, you know, and it's the same thing. It's that slider. He'll spin the slider. He's got a great one, but on occasion he gets it. He doesn't get on top of it and get that really good downward plane going to it. And when you throw to left-handers, if you throw down and into lefties, you got to get it in there. If you leave it on the plate, boy, that's right in their whopping zone. And I mean, that's danger, danger, danger all the way. And that's what's happened a couple of times, for sure.
So, Coom, on the road trip, which was encouraging, 5-4, you'll take it. But I think until the last game, you started to worry a little bit, or maybe I'm overreacting, but Cody Bellinger did not have a great road trip. And I think maybe that's just a product of he started fast and cooled off. But are you seeing anything specific from your vantage point that was – needing correcting, or where is your concern level if it's, you know, registered at all about Cody Bellinger?
I think for Cody, he gets when he's not going good, which every hitter has this thing. And there's very few that you saw through the years that don't really have many flaws in their swing, maybe a Bonds or a Griffey and, you know, some of those guys. But when Cody gets into these ruts a little bit where he's really shoot going uphill, right? The swing is really going uphill. And then what that does is it leaves some holes in the strike zone that they can throw to. And he has a really hard time covering them. But with that being said, he went through that last year. He went through it with the Dodgers, but he went through it last year a little bit and he covered them. He got a flatter swing is, you know, the simple way to describe it. His swing got flatter. He stayed in the hitting zone longer, and he started using the other side of the diamond a lot more. That hasn't quite worked out yet. He's tried in Seattle to use the other side of the field a little bit and was still under just a little and hit balls in the air as opposed to that line drive to left like we saw a lot last year. But here's the encouraging part is I see I've seen Cody fix that. So to say that rut could stay for a real long time, like let's say it did in LA, where, you know, maybe health was part of it too. I think that's fixable. I think he knows that he can get the swing flatter through the zone. It just takes a little work maybe to come home and get some time where he can spend it in the cage and swing his way out of this a little bit, and he'll be fine. He's not a concern for me at all. I think Cody's heck of a baseball player. He's done a great job in center. He just hasn't quite found his groove yet swinging the bat.
Ron, earlier in the interview, David said he doesn't want to see Morel leaving third base. Doesn't want to see him in the outfield is what he said. But you as a third baseman, you know, there were some shakes early in the year. I felt like he had a great defensive road trip. I mean, just based on, you know, you're playing in the middle of the night. I'm not staying up all night, but I'm watching all the highlights, and there were some real highlights.
Well, here's the thing about him, Mike. He is a dynamic player, and he's a great athlete. And I know Craig Counsell doesn't like hearing about guys being great athletes when you're playing baseball. He wants guys to catch the ball, get outs. You know, everybody's a good player in the big leagues. But I agree with you. I do believe his athletic ability over other people allow him to make certain plays, and he's made them. He's got a cannon for an arm. He's made some plays going to his backhand side that were just unbelievable and huge plays for the Cubs. That's been great. And to me, it's a wow moment. But he's also made some plays that are difficult third base plays that the average fan just expects you to make when you're watching. And a good third baseman makes them. And you know what? Now he's starting to make them. His footwork is getting better and better and better. To me, it all comes down to his internal game clock of understanding how much time he's got before he's got to deliver the baseball to first base. That is getting better and better because he's out there every day, and he's making those plays. I love Christopher's work. I love what the Cubs are doing with him, and I'm real happy for him because I see the progression getting better. He's going to be their third baseman. I really believe that. I think you're going to see him be a third base all season long.
If you were starting to rank the Cubs starting pitchers so far this season, how far down do you go before you get to Ben Brown?
That's a good one. I wasn't prepared for that one, David.
I love Stumping Coombe.
Yeah, you win today.
it's a tough one, though, isn't it? It's a dilemma.
It really is because it's a great dilemma. And when you talk to his manager, you talk to other scouts and, you know, that are friends of mine at the ballpark, you look at him and go, whoa, that's unique. That's something different than what we're seeing everywhere else because of his arm. Two starts ago, he threw in the first three innings. I'm trying to think who it was. Was it Seattle? No, it wasn't Seattle. It was, who was it? Anyway, it was Seattle. Two starts ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was throwing absolute bullets past them. And that's a pretty good club. They're a playoff contending club. His first three innings, I don't know if he needed to throw anything else. I'm just sitting up there looking at his fastball going, wow, he's painting it on the corners. He's elevating it in the zone for strikes. And they're just behind his heater. I mean, the whole lineup. And they had some guys that can really swing the bats. And so he is he's a unique talent. That's a unique arm. There's no doubt about that at all. And the league is figuring that out real quick because they're having some tough at-bats against them.
Great stuff, Ron. Great catching up with you. Appreciate it. Should be a fun weekend. I mean, that's the – you know, Florida may find their form from a year ago, but it's nice to come off a road trip and have, like, a nice – kind of, I don't want to be, I mean, it's baseball. Anything can happen, but this should be a fun weekend.
Yeah, if the Cubs can do some good against Florida, they've had their struggles early. You know, we'll see how that goes, but it would be nice to get back home. The sun is shining here downtown, which is, you know, good to see. The weather will be good, and we get some wins, you know, and get on track here and really make a good push. That would be great.
Yeah, maybe you guys can start having fun in the booth now, huh? You guys are having a good time.
You can't ask for everything, David.
it's been enjoyable. I don't know what you guys were doing out west. It sounds like you were having a good time, though.
Well, when we start having a bad time in the booth, that's when I'll be spending a lot more time in Clearwater Beach. I'll tell you that.
No, love it, Cooper.
We're having
thanks.
A great time. Yeah, we are. We really are. And by the way, I didn't really mean you guys owed me coffee, but it sure would have been nice on the West Coast.
We're going to mail you a cup.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect, Mike. You boys have a great weekend.
See you, buddy.
Thanks, Coom. Good
Dustin
stuff.
Fax Coom a cup of coffee. Fax it over.
I'm going to Venmo him coffee.
There you go.
Coffee
let's
money.
Do let's do it.
There we go.
312-644-6767. Love Ron Coomer. And it's been so much fun watching the way this season is going. And that road trip was great. It's a good road trip. And there's a lot to talk about. Good things, bad things, the whole way around.
Road trip was great. Coming back home would be a fun series against the Marlins. And speaking of the Marlins, Tim Anderson had something to say yesterday. I think it's worth addressing.
Yeah, we'll take a listen to it next. Mully and Hall on the Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
They're so different, you know what I mean? Like, it could be love, it could be hate, you know what I mean? It's just so emotional. But I don't really know. You know, I don't really know, because, you know, the last year kind of took a lot out of me. And consider, you know where my years was before then. You know, just one decision kind of, you know, messed that up, and I'm okay with that. But they're kind of up and down. But I only want to think about, you know, my career and what I can do to better myself as a person and as a player.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's the voice of Tim Anderson. He's back in Chicago. He is now the shortstop of the Florida Marlins, and they'll be playing the Cubs this weekend, obviously starting today. First pitch at 1:20. The preview of the game starts at 12:45 here on the Score.
White Sox did not pick up his $14 million option. Wise move on their part, because he was bad last year. Not only bad, I think he, by his standards, was terrible. 2.45 batting average in 493 at bats. It was time to move on for everyone. Change of scenery, try to benefit him. Wasn't a lot of interest in Tim Anderson. The Marlins pick him up 1 year, $5 million. So he comes in and arrives at Wrigley Field hitting .267 this year without a home run yet. Two runs batted in, playing shortstop every day for a team that is struggling right now. The Marlins off to a bad start, and Tim Anderson back in town sounded a little mixed emotions, but also I think accepting of the fact, Mully, that he needed a change of scenery.
Well, I got a lot of time for Tim Anderson, and he was a good servant of the White Sox and was a hell of a player for a long while there, but things kind of went off the boil. I would argue that maybe Tim is responsible as anyone for why that happened. And unfortunately, you know, he did not do enough to earn them picking up that $14 million option.
I agree with that.
It's as much his fault as anyone else.
No doubt about it. And I think that when you look at players like Tim Anderson, it was maybe a lot of responsibility carrying around as the face of the franchise, if you will, as the catalyst to that team. And yet nobody doubted if he was ready for it. And then he's got to hold himself responsible and accountable for not living up to those expectations. It was 3 years ago this August when he hit the home run in the cornfields.
Yep.
The homer in the corn.
That was amazing.
Joe Buck said this guy, why he should be the face of baseball. And he talked yesterday about what burden that created.
It could be tough at times, you know, but we're here now, you know, and people are having fun, you know, their bat flips and people are expressing themselves. And, you know, just to finally, you know, see the game where it is now, you know, it's in a good spot. And overall, you know, I'm happy, you know, I'm not really worried about nothing else. You know, I'm happy. I'm excited. I'm in a good place. And I'm continue to keep working on myself to, you know, continue to keep getting better and get back to, you know, the player that I used to be.
You know, it's tough because when you think about kind of his fall from grace, it's a lot like the White Sox, right? 3 years ago, Russ Dorsey wrote a really good column for the MLB Network about how the Sox were the, you know, up-and-coming team in MLB. You know, they're winning the AL Central title in 2020. They got this core that's going well, and they got club control of everyone.
Then what happened?
Yeah. Well, what happened is right now they're the worst team in baseball. That's what happened.
And right now they're being compared by Jason Stark, who knows a little something about baseball. He's got a story on The Athletic comparing them to the worst team in baseball history, the 62 Mets.
I wouldn't argue it. I think it's well worth.
Oh my gosh!
I know it's well worth kind of looking at things like that, David. The thing that Russ wrote about that just stopped me cold because I had not thought about it, frankly, is that because the White Sox payroll is where it is and they are not, you know, over investing in the team. Should we put it that way? They're not paying any luxury tax or anything. As a result of that, they are. They changed the rules of the draft. So because they're not a revenue-sharing team, they have the fifth pick in the draft in 2024. That is locked in. They are the fifth choice. Because they're in the top 10, next year, the earliest they can draft is the 10th pick. They are going through the worst season, as you say, maybe ever. And they're going to be the worst team in baseball. And the gift for that, the reward, is that they'll pick 10th. It's not like they're going to be sitting there because they've been so awful,
right?
And they're going to be able to take, yeah, you know.
Well, they're so far
Baltimore
gone that one draft pick, draft class is not going to make any sort of impact.
I understand that. But my point is they've picked the wrong year to bottom out.
They did. But it's inevitable. They are bottoming out. The descent began last year, 101 losses. Tim Anderson was a part of that slog of a season. And so, obviously, when he gathered the Chicago media before the rainout yesterday, he was asked about what went wrong and how did things sour with the Sox.
We weren't winning. You know, you weren't really winning. And I don't know, man. A lot of my decisions as well, you know, off the field, you know, kind of interrupted with a lot of things as well. We understood that. And it's hard to, you know, it's hard to win when you don't have the right guys to go out and compete. You know what I mean? And that want to win it. But you know, that don't have anything to do with where we are now. I'm only looking forward, I'm not looking back. You know, I wish them well. But I'm gonna continue to keep, you know, trusting my process and, you know, continue to keep going and growing.
Prove it year for Tim Anderson. It's a one year prove it deal.
You know, he mentions his off the field decision. I mean, he knows that he's as much the architect of his downfall as anyone.
I think that's maturity. He's 30 years old, and we saw him grow up kind of on the South Side and go through some of the different things that he went through pretty publicly last year, uncomfortably so. And so this is still a guy who I find very likable. The bat flip mentality you attribute to Tim Anderson, certainly. And I just wonder what's next for him. The Marlins, you know, could be a long-term home for him depending on how the season goes. I hope he reinvents himself and starts to hit with the power we started to see with him at times with the White Sox. You know, Mully, I don't need to remind you. I mean, he had four seasons there that were over 300, and he was one of these guys that you thought was always going to fall out of bed hitting. And that's the one thing you could count on. And that hasn't been the case lately, so let's hope he can rediscover that. And just you hear him talk, and it reminds you and takes you back to a time when anything seemed possible for him. And now, unfortunately, he's kind of at a crossroads with his career.
Yeah, well, I mean, is there a way back?
I think so. I mean, I think that you can see examples of Major League Baseball that he's not 35. You know, he's not a guy that is washed up. He's got to be more consistent than he has. And maybe he sounded, at least he's saying, he's number one, he's taking responsibility for his role in the Sox demise. He's also sounding, and he said that he's in a better place physically and mentally than he has been in a very long time.
I got to tell you, he doesn't sound overly confident to me. And I think that what we saw happen over the course of his career, for whatever reason, you know, whether it was the off-the-field stuff and his and putting his marriage in peril, whatever way you want to term it, I think it was his lack of confidence that really kind of – he seems kind of battered mentally.
Well, he's fueled by charisma and confidence and swagger. That's part of the bat flip mentality. He doesn't look like a guy that is got that swagger back yet. It's going to be gradual, though. He's 17 games into a season in a new environment, a new city, a new team, and I don't know if I heard a guy who lacks confidence. He might lack just a certain comfort level as he continues to adapt and adjust. I think from a baseball perspective, you do wonder where the power went. You look at his background. He had 20 home runs in 2018, 18 homers in 2019. He had some pop in that bat that we haven't really seen.
No.
You didn't see it last year. He has yet to homer this year.
No.
And that, to me, is when he starts doing that, driving the ball more than he has. Maybe that will be the first sign. But I don't disagree. I mean, you don't hear somebody who you're like, oh, boy, I believe in Tim Anderson again. I think we'll start to believe in Tim Anderson again when he starts to sound more like he believes in himself.
I just feel like the whole thing's a train wreck. Everybody involved in it. The White Sox, what happened, the Tony La Russa experiment, the whole bloody thing. It's hard to sit back and look at it right now and feel anything other than you just kind of shake your head and you throw your hands up to a certain extent. And it's just none of it's good, David. None of it is good.
Well, none of it is good. And you wonder about if it can end up being historically bad, which is what Jason Stark asked the question. He says he found himself in a debate in the press box in Philadelphia. The topic was one that no team wants to get dragged into. Which team has the best chance to supplant the 62 Mets as the losingest team of the modern era, the 3-15 White Sox or the 4-15 Rockies? You debate that. Meanwhile, the Marlins, 4-15, they would like a word. There are a lot of bad teams. There's three really bad teams in baseball. One of them's on the north side this weekend. One of them lives on the south side.
And the other one has a former Cubs MVP on it.
Exactly.
So there are connections.
There are connections. There are always connections.
It's tough. I am curious, and how do I put this? I'm very curious to see how Tim Anderson is received this weekend. And by that, I simply mean, you know, Javi shows up on the south side and people boo him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone on the north side could care. I don't think Tim Anderson is even worthy of the boos.
It might be a smattering,
yeah,
as they say.
I don't think anyone.
You always say smattering and boo, smattering of boos. I think there could be smattering. Now, if he homers,
yeah,
hits his first home run of the season, oh, and he flips his bat,
yeah, well, that's
then
different.
It'll be a throaty, lusty booing.
We were talking about, since we're on the White Sox theme here a little bit, right? The connection, obviously. 10 runs, I put the over-under at 10 in the first segment of the show for the amount of runs the White Sox possibly could score in three games against the Phillies. David, I think you had it at 6, right?
Yeah.
And Brandon kind of saw it in the middle. But, like what are the chances? What kind of odds could you get of Tim Anderson hitting a home run at Wrigley Field this weekend?
Have to look into that.
Is Hendricks pitching Sunday?
Sunday.
That's a pretty good chance. He's seen him before. Kyle Hendricks throwing batting practice currently. Tim Anderson has 60 at bats this season without a home run, I think Sunday would be the day.
Are you saying that Tim Anderson leaves Chicago with his first home run?
No, yes. I'm not saying that at all. Don't put Mully? Words in my mouth.
No.
Get those words out of my mouth.
I think.
No!
He has the lowest odds that I see right now to hit a home run in this game. Plus 1060.
I mean, he's not a power hitter.
The lowest. $100
to win 1060.
Let's do a whip around, and we'll come up with a dollar and make a bet.
He's not home run. He's not home run today.
Who wants to throw a quarter into that pool?
No, not me. Unless the wind is mightily at his back, blowing out to left field, I cannot see him.
I just wonder if Cub fans would even waste a boo on him.
See, that's my point. I don't think he's...
Would you even recognize him?
That's my point. I think that he's so far under the radar now, I just don't even know.
This guy went from being the face of baseball.
But there might be some people having a beer, you know, taking a snake out in the outfield and say, hey, well, did that guy play for the White Sox? I recognize that name.
I always... That would be it. Maybe that.
Seriously.
I always thought, though, that the... he should be the face of baseball thing was a little exaggerated and overstated. He was the face of the White Sox. I don't know that he was the face of baseball. Maybe for one shining moment in the Iowa cornfield, he was.
That's why.
But I don't know. He's not going to homer this weekend. If Jake Berger were healthy, he'd be homering. He'd be, Waveland Avenue would be the place to be if Jake Berger were healthy.
Wow.
But he's not.
We got a texter saying that he's going to go see the Sox when they go to Milwaukee this year, that he doesn't want to give any money to Jerry. God.
You get swept there, too?
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, you could go get a nice Italian sandwich at that place, Glorioso's. It's a good spot.
Nice ballpark, too.
And it's a great place to see
That's a ballpark they're not trying to get out of.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be nice more than 1,000 people there, too, by the seventh inning.
You could hit the Indian casino. All right, 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Aud, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Yesterday, normal day in Iowa, right? Just the I-Cubs, we won in the ninth inning, whatever. And then I go about my day, right? We have a day game today in Des Moines. And at 1 a.m., my roommate, Matt Mervis, is knocking on my door. And I'm like, Matt's like, hey, you need to call Marty Peavy, the manager for AAA. I go, oh, okay. So I go get my phone. It's missed calls, text messages, whatever. Call Marty at 1 a.m. He goes, hey, buddy, you're going to the big leagues. I was like, okay. Need to get my things together then. And so I packed for an hour, try to get some sleep. Didn't. My girlfriend's in town. She didn't sleep either. She's actually driving to Chicago right now. So then me and Colton Brewer leave 4 a.m., get to the airport in Des Moines. We fly to Chicago. They don't have any direct flights. Chicago to here. I get here an hour and a half before the game, and I threw.
Thanks to the Marquee Network for that highlight. It's Mully and Haw on the score. That is Hayden Wesneski talking about his trip to Seattle, and you know, you can get a lot of coffee in Seattle. I'm sure he got a cup of Joe when he landed. And then obviously
Arizona.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Arizona. Yep. Arizona hero.
And
you can get coffee in Arizona.
His
too.
Poor fiance driving to Chicago.
Yeah.
She gets here. Maybe, hey, honey, I'm back to Iowa. Let's go back. He's gone.
Did she drive him back to Iowa?
Before he got here.
Yeah.
I don't know what the situation was in terms of the travel arrangements, but he did what he needed to do.
That's tough. I mean,
90 minutes before the game.
So he pitched four innings, right?
Four innings, one hit, and Craig Counsell called it the outing of the year.
So, but my question is, so that meant that he couldn't pitch for how long?
Well, that was before the rainout, I believe.
Yeah.
So maybe they wanted to get fresher bodies
okay. In
here. What's interesting is that poor Marty Peavy couldn't reach Hayden Wesneski, had to enlist Matt Mervis for help.
But
knock on the door, and then he couldn't get Colton Brewer, according to Maddie Lee in the Sun-Times this morning. Marty Peavy had to go to the lobby of the hotel where Brewer was staying, got the receptionist to call the room. The receptionist is with him on the phone the whole time, basically telling him, hey, you're going to the big leagues. Congratulations, Mr. Brewer, she said. I mean, that's hilarious. Marty Peavy telling the basically Colton Brewer he's getting called up via the receptionist at the hotel desk. So I wonder how long he'll stay.
Yeah. You know, who knows? It's hard to figure. I think, though, that if you're Wisniewski, and you have that pitching performance and your manager calls it the best of the year, and then you're right back down, that's got to be deflating a little bit.
It's got to be deflating. He tweeted out something to the effect of what a 2 days it has been. I think with him, it's much better than the alternative. You want to at least get to the point where you're called upon, and then when you deliver, he now has proven to the Cubs that he can be trusted again, and that's valuable. And this is maybe just the machinations of a roster and what you have to do to keep people fresh with the bullpen that's taxed in a 13-pitcher limit on your roster, and it's the transient life of a major league relief pitcher, somebody who's kind of a 4A guy in between AAA and the majors. I think you're going to I'm pretty confident you're going to see Hayden Wisniewski again, and I wouldn't be surprised if he contributes in a big way to this bullpen moving forward.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that we've seen already in the big leagues, and he's done well, and certainly he did great in that outing where he's kind of pushed to the limit. But it's fun, and they're in good shape now. Jameson Taillon is back, and he will be starting this afternoon here on The Score, and then you've got a couple of games on Saturday because of the rainout last night. There are two. It's a split doubleheader, so it's not
day night doubleheader.
Yeah, it's not.
You got the early one. We don't know what order the pitchers are going to go yet. Shota Imanaga will pitch one of them. I would give him the choice, and then Javier Assad will pitch the other.
Right.
With Kyle Hendricks pitching Sunday in the finale.
That's right. That's the way it'll work, and it'll be good to hopefully see Hendricks get his act together. He of the 12.71 ERA, things should be a little bit easier against in a home game against.
There's only one pitcher in Major League Baseball with a worse ERA than Kyle Hendricks right now, and that's not good.
No, and you know, we're not claiming that Hendricks has been good, but it's the sort of thing. Again, you know, you make these decisions when you have to make these decisions. You don't rush to judgment in MLB.
Yeah.
You need pitchers. That's the life.
You're going to give him every opportunity to prove that he's still that guy. And the only pitcher with the worst ERA is Kyle Freeland in Colorado. I think that they're called the Rockies. Is that the team in Colorado?
That's a launching pad, Colorado, right? I think you can blame.
So that's with an asterisk? So in Mully's world, Kyle Hendricks got the worst ERA in baseball, the weighted ERA. Because Kyle Freeland pitches in Colorado.
I may have said that unintentionally, but I'll take it. I'll wear it. Adam Amin is going to join us next. The Bulls play tonight right here on The Score. It is going to be a playoff. It's the second play-in game, but it's a playoff. It's the right. To get to the
play
Celtics.
Into the playoffs.
The play-in number two. Can they do better than they did a year ago? We'll ask that of Adam Amin next. Mully and Hall on The Score.